Welcome to Securing America with me, Frank Gaffney, the program that's a kind of owner's manual for protecting the country we love against all enemies, foreign and domestic, to God's glory and that of his kingdom. We are going to do a special program of Securing America today. The entire program will be devoted to a new product of our Center for Security Policy, a product of which I am extremely proud. It is entitled The Team B3 Report, and it's a new book with the very important message in its title. The CCP is at war with America. That is, of course, the Chinese Communist Party. We're going to talk in the course of the program with several members of Team B3, and who better to start with than our friend and colleague, the chairman of the Center's advisory board, the former chairman of the House Intelligence Committee, also the U.S. ambassador to the Netherlands during the Trump administration, former Congressman Pete Hoekstra, who was with Lieutenant General Jerry Boykin, the co-chairman of this project, instrumental in it from inception to completion. And I'm thrilled to be able to kick off our conversation about this very important new book with Congressman Hoekstra. Welcome back, sir. It's good to have you here at Securing America once again.
Always good to be with you, Frank.
Congratulations. First of all, let's talk a little bit about the inspiration of this project. The Team B thing might be worth a word of explanation, if you would.
Yeah, I mean, the inspiration for this really goes back when I was chairman of the Intelligence Committee in the House. So often, the intelligence community would come in with a single narrative based on the information, but you know, they'd come in and say with medium confidence or whatever, and you say, well, what are the alternatives? Quite often they wouldn't give you an alternative scenario. It would have been great to have an alternative scenario when the Bush administration decided to go to war in Iraq about whether weapons of mass destruction actually existed in Iraq or not. But I use the Team B concept on occasion in the intelligence, when I was on the intelligence committee. But the real inspiration for this, Frank, came when you and I were having a discussion about, you know, where did this virus come from? And we started reading the two or three reports that came out of our intelligence community. And we said, this is garbage. They're saying with
they just couldn't tell where it came from. Maybe it was natural. Maybe it was from the lab.
It was a limited analysis, and it, from my perspective, it was a massive failure, not only of the intelligence community, but a government-wide failure of gathering intelligence and interpreting and analyzing it. So, what do I mean by that? A massive failure. Well, we do know that the intelligence community never put in their, their deck of top targets that they were going to, or that they should be tracking, a Chinese bioweapons program, even though we know that for 20 years, China has been aggressively pursuing a bioweapons program. It wasn't on the list of targets for our intelligence community. The second thing is their analysis that they put forward said, yeah, we don't know where it came from. We may never know. But that was it. They didn't do any further analysis about what are the goals and the ambitions of China long term. They didn't enlighten the American people. They never addressed the question of, well, why didn't China ever cooperate with international organizations to, get in front of the pandemic? Why, as they were locking down Wuhan, were they allowing millions of people to travel from China to other parts of the world, basically facilitating the spread of the virus? The intelligence community, our government, never addressed those types of concerns. So you and I started talking and said, you know, my experience, your experience, we need a Team B effort to put forward another scenario as to what may be going on here.
Yeah, just getting the facts out that were being ignored by the intelligence community and the U.S. government more generally. And Pete, I know one of the things that is a really important element of this Team B report, and I think people will be very edified by it, is the introduction that you and General Boykin co-authored, in which you talked about this really as a failure, not just in the sort of microcosmic sense of this particular incident, but really how the assessment or national intelligence estimating process of the U.S. intelligence community has really become defective. You alluded to, you know, an earlier episode where we might have done better, but there are many, whether it's Iraq or Russia or China or Ukraine or what. These are the sorts of things on which we have to do better. Talk a little bit about the dysfunctionality that you found both during your time in the House, but also, of course, in the period since.
Sorry, Frank, we don't have enough time. Go on to your next question. No, but let me give you just a couple of points. The first of which is, I think it's become, you know, dangerously and frighteningly apparent that the intelligence community has become politicized. We've seen that with, you know, the former DNI, James Clapper. You know, we've seen that with John Brennan, the former director of the CIA. Number one, the problem is too many of our intelligence products are now shaped by politics and not by intelligence or by information. The second thing is it has become a process whereby the 18 organizations within the intelligence community work towards consensus. And what you get with consensus is you get down to the lowest common denominator, which means in reality, when you read an assessment, it tells you nothing. It gives you no insights. And those are probably the two biggest failures in the process that we see in our intelligence community, along with a lot of other failures or shortcomings, but those are the biggest two. They're not willing to go and have competing analysis, which is what we're doing. We're putting out, you know, our analysis and saying, you know, test this against other potential theories. And we think that there's going to be a very, very credible case that what we've put together in this excellent product is much more understandable and believable when you take a look at what's happened over the last 2.5 years. And actually, if you're taking a look at China, what's happened over the last 20 years than what's been put out there by anybody else.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more, Congressman. And I think, again, in part, that's a function of the quality of leadership that that you and General Boykin, with whom we'll be speaking next about all this, brought to bear. But just a further word, you know, back in 1976, there was the first Team B exercise in competitive analysis that gave President, at the time, Carter, but future President Ronald Reagan, alternative analysis and estimation of the threat of the Soviet Union. We did a similar effort in 2010 on Sharia, the threat to America, at the Center for Security Policy. So this Team B3 has a lineage, in addition to the efforts that you made on Capitol Hill, of trying to get that second opinion, which is so urgently needed, especially when the initial diagnosis is so transparently wanting. Congressman Pete Hoekstra, Mr. Ambassador, thank you for your leadership on this Team B report. You can find it at ccpatwar.com if you want to buy the book. And of course, follow the webinar and other work that we'll be doing on all of this at presentdangerchina.org. Congressman, we'll talk with you in the moments ahead throughout the day today. And I know as we lay out the case for the Chinese Communist Party's biological attack against America in the days to come. God bless you, my friend. Next up, we'll speak with General Jerry Boykin right after this. This is Frank Affney with the Secure Freedom Minute. When you get a questionable diagnosis of a problem, particularly one with potential life and death repercussions, it's a good idea to get a second opinion. Rarely has that been more true than with respect to the Chinese Communist Party's unrestricted warfare against America. Fortunately, a team of distinguished national security professionals sponsored by our Center for Security Policy is today disputing the U.S. government's party line on the virus that triggered the COVID-19 pandemic. This Team B3 found that coronavirus likely came from a Chinese biological weapons laboratory, and the CCP's deliberate efforts to spread it outside China mean the resulting pandemic was a biological attack. As such, it fits the party's long-standing doctrine, plans, and growing capabilities for such asymmetric and truly unrestricted warfare against us. Catch the team's important webinar at 1 p.m. Eastern Time today by registering at presentdangerchina.org. This is Frank Affney. Welcome back. There are a few people that I admire more, or I'm more thrilled to be able to feature on this program than our next guest. He is, along with former Congressman Pete Hoekstra, the co-chairman of the Team B3 work that we are describing in the course of this special edition of Securing America. His name is Lieutenant General William Jerry Boykin, United States Army retired. In addition to being one of our most decorated and accomplished special operators in the course of his long career in the United States Army, 36 years, if memory serves correctly, he also worked in a number of capacities in and with the U.S. intelligence community, including in his final duty station as the Deputy Undersecretary of Defense for Intelligence. He is these days the executive vice president of an indispensable organization in Washington, the Family Research Council, as well as a member of our Committee on the Present Danger, China, and of Team B3, of course. General Boykin, it is so good to have you with us, sir. Thank you for joining us, and thank you for your contributions to this really important book, The CCP is at War.
Thank you, Frank. It's always a pleasure to be with you.
We've talked a little bit with Congressman Hoekstra about the dysfunctionality that is evident in the U.S. intelligence community, the politicization that contributed clearly to a bad opinion, if you will, about where this virus came from. They just couldn't really tell. We'll be talking a bit more about that momentarily with Stephen Hatfield, Dr. Hatfield, one of our country's leading experts on the science of all of this. But I wanted to ask you about the national security implications of the evidence we've accumulated that the CCP deliberately spread this deadly virus to this country and indeed the rest of the world, which we've characterized in the TMB report as a biological warfare attack. Your thoughts, sir?
Yeah, right. Let me go back to what you said about Ambassador Hoekstra, the politicization of the intel community. You know, one of the first things you learn when you're in the intel community as part of that community, you learn that intelligence drives and supports policy, especially foreign policy. And we've got it backwards. We've got it just the opposite way, which is one of the reasons that we did not acknowledge that this was a deliberate attack by the Chinese. And that is because it didn't support the foreign policy objectives of an administration that has totally ignored the realities of what China is in terms of an existential threat to America.
Yes, so true. And the Biden administration, I guess you're talking about in that context, has made a series of mistakes in the policy space as a result of not wanting to recognize the existential threat to America that we face from China, one of which is its failing to both appreciate this biological warfare angle to that threat, but also, sir, would you say that they have taken steps to prepare us for what may be coming next in terms of more and worse viruses emanating from the Chinese biological warfare program?
Well, first of all, we need to remember that we helped fund we helped fund this. We gave money that went to the Wuhan labs there. So we helped fund an attack on America, a biological attack on America. And I am not so sure that that this administration has come to grips with the fact that we can't continue funding people and entities that are this kind of threat to America. And I don't think that we are any better off right now in terms of being able to stop a BW attack than we were 2.5 years ago when it first came out. I guess it was December of 2019. Are we any better off today? Have we taken the steps necessary to stop China from committing another act of war? And that's exactly what this was. It is war by other means. And that is something this administration just has not come to grips with yet.
General, one of the things that, to your point about the help that we've been giving this mortal enemy to become more dangerous to us, is that in addition to the assistance that, as you've described, and we'll talk more about with Dr. Hatfield, people like Tony Fauci and the National Institute of Health and Centers for Disease Control and so on gave to the Chinese Communist Party, including gain of function technologies as well as underwriting. But in addition, and I think this is a hugely important feature of our book, The CCP is at War with America, is the extent to which the Chinese have actually continued to have Chinese Communist Party officers and agents, People's Liberation Army officers among them, in our own research institutions and laboratories. You and I have talked about the problems with counterintelligence in a lot of contexts over the years. This would seem to be one of the most egregious self-inflicted wounds that I can imagine. And it's continuing as best we can tell.
Yeah, there are things that the intelligence community is not going to share with us, and they should not. But the extent of the infiltration of this nation at every level and in every entity is something that Americans need to know and understand. It's not just financial institutions. It's not just academic institutions. It's our government. Our government is penetrated. But that's what you're talking about, Frank, is we've got credible military operatives, intelligence operatives, that have infiltrated our government, that have infiltrated academia and all entities within America. And if the Americans understood just how pervasive and prolific this infiltration is, it would scare them to death. The intel community is, first of all, they're not tracking it properly because they don't want to know the truth because it doesn't support the agenda of this administration. But secondly, It is well beyond what even you and I fully understand or know about, because the intel community has not shared that with the American public and probably has not shared it with the administration simply because the administration doesn't want to hear it.
Well, it presumes that they actually understand the full gravity of it themselves, and I'm not sure that's entirely the case, but it's a place where I hope is this book will serve to create a demand. And General, I wanted to close with this. It's really important. We'll talk more about it again with Brian Kennedy shortly. It's really important, it seems to me, that those political leaders, the people who seek to represent us in our government, and without regard for party, but they be both clued up about these very real threats and growing, metastasizing threats from China, as well as be accountable for taking action if elected, given a mandate, to protect us against them. How important would you say that is for example, the elections of this fall?
I tell you, anybody that is running for office, really at almost any level, but certainly at the federal level, that does not understand the fundamentals of what we've put in this book, they need to be educated. And if they are unwilling to get informed on this topic of what China is and the threat that it presents and how it has infiltrated our country and attacked us through this virus, that person probably should not be running for a federal office. We've got to take a very bold step now and try and give this information to everybody that's running. Everybody's going to be in the House or the Senate or any other place of elected officials. Then if they can grasp what's going on here, they will be much more effective. But if they are not willing to try and grasp this, they shouldn't be running.
Amen. We have to leave it at that. General Jerry Boykin, thank you for your service to our country, sir. It is breathtakingly important as you continue to provide it, notably as the co-chairman of the Team B3. Thank you for that too, sir. Come back to us again soon, if you would. Dr. Stephen Hatfield comes to us next to talk about the science of this biological warfare attack and more right after this.
Night after night, in cities across the country, black-garbed assailants clash with police in the streets, smash windows, and throw Molotov cocktails in an effort to destroy police stations, federal courthouses, and local businesses, all in the name of anti-fascism. Most Americans are now, sadly, all too aware of the movement known as Antifa. But where did they come from? What do they want? And how do we stop their campaign of violent mayhem? The Center for Security Policy Press is proud to present Unmasking Antifa, Five Perspectives on a Growing Threat. This new book looks at the history, ideology, organization, finances, and strategy of Antifa and provides an in-depth analysis for law enforcement officers, policymakers, and the general public. From street fighting tactics of the Black Bloc to fundraising by prominent left-wing foundations, Unmasking Antifa is the go-to guide to understand this elusive and dangerous threat. Get your copy of Unmasking Antifa, Five Perspectives on a Growing Threat at Amazon.com.
We're back as part of our continuing coverage of the Team B3 analysis of the Chinese Communist Party is at war with us. We're going to turn next to one of the most important contributors to the Team B3 effort. It is no surprise that Dr. Stephen Hatfield, one of our country's preeminent experts on matters of biological warfare and how best to defend against it, has a storied record of service to our country, but his contribution to this particular project was incalculably important, and I'm very appreciative to him for his time and expertise and analysis and written contributions and all the rest that went into putting this project together. Dr. Hatfield, again, heartfelt thanks to you for all that you've done for our country and are continuing to do, but particularly a hat tip to you for the scientific component of this analysis. I think it was simply incalculably important. So welcome to Securing America, sir. Again, Seth, good to have you.
Thank you, Frank. Thank you.
I'd like to start with you by asking about the sort of government thesis, the Director of National Intelligence assessment, that you just can't tell. Just as plausible that this virus, the so-called SARS-CoV-2 virus, emanated from natural sources in China as from some sort of laboratory. You've really wrung that out. Tell us where you came down.
Well, when the pandemic started, we were waiting for something like this as a result of SARS-1 and as a result of some bat samples that had been collected in around 2014, showing that it was possible for a bat virus, a coronavirus, to transfer to man. There's other examples of viruses that could do this. The Hendra virus in Australia when it broke out. So it was always assumed it would be a natural zoonotic, which means a disease of animals that transmit to man. And like many other investigators, I was fairly convinced that this is what it was. We didn't have a lot of information on the virus. We had a sequence. China wasn't cooperating at all, which was a little suspicious. But I really sat on the sidelines on this for most of 2020. We were so busy trying to deal with the effects of the virus and to get things on track with regards to a response, that there wasn't a lot of time to delve into it in depth.
And let me just say, part of what you were so busy with at the time was you were helping the executive office of the president deal with both the nature of the disease and how best to contend with it. So you did have your hands rather full.
We were trying to get everything back on the national pandemic plan and away from vaccination. But we started to look at this in more detail. And a paper had slipped through in 2020 that was published in the Proceeding of the National Academy of Science. And it showed that there was an unusual genetic sequence in the S1 fraction of the spike protein. This is the protein that recognizes human cells and binds to them and allows the virus to enter the cell and cause infection. And it was a covert sequence. When you looked at the genetic blueprints of the virus, with regards to its makeup, when the genetic information was transmitted into proteins, it didn't appear. But a team of structural protein engineers had looked at it from a three-dimensional structure, and they found a sequence in there that was functionally and three-dimensional structurally equivalent to staphylococcal enterotoxin B. Now, this is a protein that featured predominantly in offensive biological warfare programs in the early 60s. It had been known to science for quite a while. It was involved, one of the toxins involved in the toxic shock syndrome in the 70s that were caused by a poorly tested tampon product. And a lot of women died from toxic shock syndrome.
Yes. So, Doctor, let me just ask you, we're going to run out of time before we run out of things to talk with you about, but what you've described is the lack of evidence that there was a natural occurrence here and some very suspicious genetic telltales that indicate that somebody deliberately engineered this to be both transmissible to humans and among humans, of course, but also deadly. No?
Yes. Failure to show a origin animal for SARS-CoV-2. The fact that it just suddenly appeared and really didn't infect bats that well. This is something that takes a long time to evolve and to adapt. It just appeared out of nowhere, exceptionally able to bind to human cells. It contains this sequence for functional staphylococcal type enterotoxin, which is from bacteria. What's it doing in a virus? And what's it doing in precisely the correct spot of one of the viral proteins so that when it's expressed on the cell surface, it rotates, it's cleaved off, the S1 fraction, and it's available to contact the lymphocytes in your body to cause essentially a toxic shock syndrome.
Yeah. So what you've described, what you've described is something that if one wanted to inflict harm on humans, you would look to do through the kind of genetic engineering tools, the gain of function tools that, frankly, we now know Tony Fauci, the National Institute of Health, the U.S. government, the U.S. taxpayer, for that matter, facilitated being done in the Wuhan Institute of Virology or other laboratories in communist China, as well as laboratories in this country that the Chinese Communist Party has had personnel in as well. Talk about those two aspects of this drama.
This is really rather outrageous, and it reflects on a failure of the State Department, senior leaders in the State Department, who wanted to minimize this. It's all starting to come out now. There's two divisions in the State Department that are supposed to be monitoring technology transfers, biomedical, physical, mechanical, this type of thing. And how we could have allowed a laboratory of a country that has a exceptionally well-developed biological weapons program.
Illegal biological weapons program.
Illegal biological weapons program. They are a signatory to the Biological Weapons Convention. How this could have been allowed to happen is beyond belief. China, it looks like, has not only broken the Biological Weapons Convention, three or four sections of it, but has also broken the international health regulations by failing to inform the world of a SARS-like virus with pandemic potential in a timely manner.
One other aspect of this, Steve, if I may, is that they not only behaved rather badly in that respect, but even more concerning, and I think sort of at the core of our findings as a Team B3, is this point that they knew what they were dealing with when they allowed people not to travel within China from Wuhan, but to go all over the world, including, of course, to this country. Just, we have less than a minute. Closing thought on that point?
To me, that's a biological attack. They knew that this was highly infectious person to person. They delayed it at least 4 weeks. They convinced the WHO not to declare it as person to person transmissible. The evidence was overwhelming that it was. Why else would you lock down your cities?
They also got the WHO to say, hey, don't restrict travel from China to other parts of the world at the very moment when it was becoming increasingly obvious this was a very serious problem. Dr. Stephen Hatfield, we'll have to leave it at that for the moment. We'll be talking with you throughout the course of this day, press conferences and webinars and so much more. Thank you again from the bottom of my heart for all you've done to help bring the scientific truth to bear in this Team B report. The CCP is at war with America. God bless you, sir, and your continued great work and service to our country. We'll be right back with Brian Kennedy right after this. This is Frank Affney with the Secure Freedom Minute. When you get a questionable diagnosis of a problem, particularly one with potential life and death repercussions, it's a good idea to get a second opinion. Rarely has that been more true than with respect to the Chinese Communist Party's unrestricted warfare against America. Fortunately, a team of distinguished national security professionals sponsored by our Center for Security Policy is today disputing the U.S. government's party line on the virus that triggered the COVID-19 pandemic. This Team B3 found that coronavirus likely came from a Chinese biological weapons laboratory, and the CCP's deliberate efforts to spread it outside China mean the resulting pandemic was a biological attack. As such, it fits the party's long-standing doctrine, plans, and growing capabilities for such asymmetric and truly unrestricted warfare against us. Catch the team's important webinar at 1 p.m. Eastern Time today by registering at presentdangerchina.org. This is Frank Affney. We're back, and we're joined by another very important member of our Team B3, indeed an important member of the universe of national security professionals with whom I'm privileged to work daily. His name is Brian Travis Kennedy. He is, among other things, the chairman of the Committee on the Present Danger China, which I'm proud to be his vice chairman. He is a driving force in public policy circles, especially the national security parts of them, hearkening back to his time as the very distinguished president of the Claremont Institute and now as president of the American Strategy Group. Brian Kennedy, thank you for your leadership in this particular initiative, as in so many others. It's great to have you back on Securing America.
Well, thank you, Frank. It's great to be with you. And let me in turn thank you for all you do, because so much of all this would not happen without your leadership. So,
well, that's very kind of you. Let me talk to you a little bit about some of the things we've already discussed with others on the program, specifically Congressman Pete Hoekstra's statement that one takeaway from all of this is that the U.S. intelligence community clearly hasn't been paying attention to the illegal biological warfare program of the Chinese Communist Party. General Boykin has made it very clear this is a serious problem. Steve Hatfill has said we've actually been attacked by it already in the form of this so-called SARS-CoV-2 virus and the pandemic, the COVID-19 pandemic it spawned. You're a strategic thinker, first and foremost. Talk a little bit about what it says about the Chinese Communist Party, its ruthlessness, its grand designs, that biological warfare seems to be very much a part of the unrestricted warfare kit that it's intent on bringing to bear for its purposes of global domination.
Yeah, I think that's a great question, Frank. The Chinese have an ambition, as any great nation does, to be masters of the entire world that they could possibly organize. They're a country of 1.4 billion people, which is run by a Chinese Communist Party of, they say nominally, 90 million people. It's probably much less than that. So they have learned that very small numbers of people can control large numbers through enough ruthlessness and deception. That's what they engage in communist China with an iron fist. And they now look to see whether they can apply that throughout the world, and most especially the United States. When the Chinese look at the United States, I think they see two kinds of people. One are the elites in Washington and in Wall Street, and those they know they can corrupt. They can buy off those folks on Wall Street, and they have. They've spent 40 years getting deeply into bed with them. And they have the kind of financial relationship now that the people on Wall Street benefit from and the Chinese Communist Party benefits from, when we're sending trillions of dollars there. In Washington,
not so much the investors, though, whose money is actually being squandered in this fashion.
Oh, absolutely. And no one's been better on that than you have, Frank. And, you know, so between Wall Street being in bed with China and the political elites in Washington being incapable of getting their minds wrapped around the Chinese threat, it's no wonder that the intelligence community doesn't examine their biological weapons program the same way they want to turn a blind eye to their missile buildup, to their naval buildup, to the advanced aircraft that the Chinese have already produced. It's almost as if you don't look at the problem, hopefully it'll go away. It'll be someone else's problem in the future. And the Chinese Communist Party knows that within that mix, they can dominate. They can dominate politically. They can dominate the information space. And they're hoping and praying. I mean, I say they're praying. They don't pray. They know. They with force know that they can feed this message to the American people and get away with it. But I think the great lesson of what we're trying to do here with this new book of ours is to explain that they're not going to get away with it, that the American people are going to learn about this. They're going to ask their elected representatives to do something about it, because it's absolutely clear this was a biological weapons attack, and shame on the American political establishment for not recognizing this before now and doing something about it.
So much there to unpack, but let me just pick up on a point that you made there towards the end, Brian Kennedy, and that is the importance of this book catalyzing the debate, not simply about the fact that the CCP is at war with America, but what we're going to do about it. And I want our audience to understand that one of the things that we hope very much to be, well, again, catalyzing is very close cross-examination of elected officials without regard to party, because this isn't going to be a question of the country being taken down only Democrats or only Republicans. The Chinese intend to take us all down and kill as many of us as they can, evidently. But what are these candidates for office of any political affiliation or stripe intent on doing? And will they commit to being accountable for taking the sorts of steps that the times clearly require? And Brian Kennedy, just very quickly, in terms of that message getting across and being acted upon, would you agree that that is the most important, ultimately, proof of the value of this project?
Absolutely. I mean, the one thing about this book is, and this is important, it was written for citizens, for them to understand it so that they could hold people accountable. A lot of times people write these books and they're written way over people's heads. This is actually written for citizens, so it can be shared with those politicians who are running this fall for office, who will be in office next year, and who can have the ability to understand just what took place and then to hold the Chinese to account.
Amen. Brian Kennedy, brilliantly said. As always, thank you for your time today. Come back to us soon. We'll speak finally with Kevin Freeman right after this. We're back, joined by yet another of the contributors to the Team B3 project. The CCP is at war with America. He's a regular on this program, and we're always delighted to have him with us. Kevin Freeman is his name. He is the host of Economic War Room with Kevin Freeman on the Blaze TV and other platforms, the author of Secret Weapon and Game Plan, a member of our Committee on the Present Danger, China, and not least a senior fellow of our Center for Security Policy. Kevin, it's always good to have you in the house virtually. Welcome back.
Thank you, Frank. Great to be with you.
So thank you for your contributions to this Team B project. I wanted to ask you specifically about the elements that are kind of in your wheelhouse. You've studied closely China's unrestricted warfare strategy and been warning about it for years. Talk about how biological warfare fits into that strategy and the kinds of damage that has been done to us as a result of this attack.
Well, you know, biological warfare, what was unleashed by the CCP, as this report explains, was perhaps the greatest economic weapon of history. It took America another $8 trillion or so in debt. We went from about $22.5 trillion to $30.5 trillion in debt. It brought inflation. It's causing problems in the stock market. It has shut down small business. It is the most impactful economic weapon that I think you can imagine. And now we're feeling the after effects of it as some of the COVID relief packages are wearing off. People are worried. What's going on with the economy? This is a direct result of the unleashing of that weapon.
It has had political repercussions as well. Talk a little bit about, well, among other things, the toppling of Donald Trump's presidency, but also its impact on our freedoms more generally.
Yeah, people need to step back and go back to where we were in the midpoint of Donald Trump's presidency. The economy was strong. We were holding China accountable. Small business was growing. And when this virus was unleashed, it reversed all of those favorable American trends and literally traded places and gave China the stronger position. And we've been harmed terribly by this, and the Chinese economy, although they have also shut down, they're willing to take that sort of pain because they knew the impact it would have. They removed a president they didn't like, and they got a president that they do like.
But to the other point, in addition to that tangible benefit to them, there was a, well, China model, for want of a better expression, that was imposed basically worldwide, including in our own country. And that has had an incredibly deleterious effect, whether it's the lockdowns or the quarantines or the mask mandates or the social distancing or worst of all, perhaps, these untested or inadequately tested, at least, vaccines and the mandates for their use and the passports to enforce those mandates, all of which is part and parcel of what the Chinese wanted everybody to do in response to this this pandemic. Just quickly, Kevin, what kind of effect has that had, not just on us economically, but as a society, as a constitutional republic?
Well, even if the Chinese didn't have malicious intent in letting the virus go, there are two competitive world visions here. One is a technocracy that's controlled by at the top, and the other is individual liberty. America was a nation built on individual liberty. Donald Trump represented that. The Chinese and the technocracy represent control of everything, how big your soda can be, which is what Mayor Bloomberg tried to put through in New York, to whether or not you can take golf clubs on a train, which is the new thing that they're upset about in China, because command and control economy from the very top is the Chinese model, and it's been touted by the elites because it serves the elites. But in the case of the United States, we believe in individual liberty. They have used this COVID unleashing as an opportunity to impose a command and control economy everywhere around the world. They determine whether you can go 5 miles from your house or 2 miles from your house, whether you can even leave your apartment in the case of Shanghai under restrictions. And they can tell you what a doctor can prescribe for you. They can tell you whether this business can stay open while they sell liquor and therefore they're approved and essential, or this business, which is a church, has to close. It gives the technocrats the opportunity to control every element of society. And yeah, that's a Chinese dream. And that's assuming that they're acting, you know, in what they believe is the best interest of the world. I think it goes far beyond that. They want that control, and they want that control for themselves.
You bet. And to call them technocrats in this case is, you know, only part of the story, of course. They're communists, fundamentally, and trying to impose this model of totalitarian control as a political instrument, no question about that. So, Kevin, one of the things that we talk about most of your visits is the fact that we are enabling all of this, that we, through investments that many of us are making unwittingly, but nonetheless, through Wall Street's, you know, manipulation of pension funds and 401k plans and exchange-traded funds and mutual funds and all the rest, as a vehicle for funding the Chinese Communist Party's unrestricted warfare against us. Quickly, talk about how dangerous that practice is and whether we can possibly continue to engage in it.
Well, they've been a bad actor under any circumstances. And let me, how do we fund the, let me count the ways. We fund the NIH funding of the labs, the bioweapons labs. We have funded them with our spending and buying all these Chinese products. We funded them by moving our plants to China. And worst, perhaps, of all, is we funded them with our stock market investments, including taking money from the pensions of servicemen and women and trying to put them into Chinese stocks. This is a part, you know, Larry Fink, BlackRock, all of these big firms that people are now becoming aware of because they own so much of American business, they're trying to close American business down or control it with ESG, while at the same time, they're rapidly expanding operations and investments in China. It's a very frightening thought. We're paying our enemy to kill us, and that's terrible.
And make it more capable of doing just that. Kevin Freeman, your leadership on all of this, including the National Security Investment Consultants Institute, is so appreciated, as is your contribution to this really important product. The CCP is at war with America. I hope people will check it out at ccpatwar.com and also check out the video of our webinar on this subject at presentdangerchina.org. I hope you're equipped to do all of that and more to help protect our country, the one country we love, and that you will go forth and multiply.
You've been listening to Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney.